I'm Lauren Leibowitz, and welcome to Blog Talk Radio and How to Be Comfortable in Your Own Shoes. It is Thursday, February 17th, and we are coming to you live from Los Angeles. Thank you so much for joining us today. We love to hear from you, so if you'd like to call in to listen live or ask questions of our delightful guest today, please do so by dialing 347-857-2710. Again, those magic 10 digits are 347-857-2710. And you can also email me at goodvibeexperience@gmail.com. That's goodvibe, V-I-B-E, experience at gmail.com. Well, February means Oscar time, and it's actually the whole month. It's a season out here in L.A. It's Hollywood, so it's Oscar season. The red carpet is out, and we are so fortunate to be talking to one of Hollywood's hottest young stars. My guest today is one of Hollywood's young filmmakers, and he just completed a short film entitled Relinquish. And this film is being shown at film festivals around the country, and from what I hear, is mesmerizing audiences everywhere. So we want to learn more about the film and my guest today. So please give a warm welcome to Garrett Goldenberg. Hi, Garrett.
Hi, Lauren. Thanks for having me on. It's a pleasure.
Hey, it's my pleasure. I feel like I'm very fortunate to get the Hollywood scoop to Hollywood's youngest stars, and that definitely is you.
Thanks. It's really overwhelming for me at first to be known as a star, as you put it, because it's not something I see myself as. I just kind of see myself as down to earth person, and really someone who's just trying to make it in the business like everybody else, in no way any different, no more, no less.
Well, you're very, very humble, and that's what makes you even more appealing, is that you have a passion for filmmaking, and you are doing it, and it's beautiful. And I want to find out. So tell us about your short film, Relinquish, and then how it was born.
Well, my short Relinquish was born out of just while I was daydreaming in my backyard one day while I was in a bit of a funk, while I was staring up at the clouds, because I really didn't have any ideas going on at the moment, and I never really directed anything that was my own idea at first, so I wasn't really confident as a writer. I wasn't really confident in myself even as a director, so I figured might as well get a start somehow. So what ended up happening was that I started thinking of different log lines. And then what happened was that when I thought of this particular log line, this particular statement, one sentence statement that pretty much summarizes the whole story in a nutshell, that's when I began to take off from that moment forward. And the story, pretty much, of what Relinquish is about a young teenage girl who decides to run away from her father after years and years of having to endure his alcoholic behavior. But then she decides to forgive him in the very end because she witnessed him suffer from a stroke.
Wow, there's a lot of very poignant topics in there.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I find it very interesting that, I don't know about you, but I think when anyone who is in the creative field and either they are about to embark on a particular project, and you often say, okay, where do I begin? And you can frustrate yourself by making it more difficult for yourself by putting up these barriers or of how it has to look. And the way you came about with relinquish, it's just that through daydreaming, here's where daydreaming is a plus, right?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, that's just one way of how I come up with ideas. There may be, there's millions and millions of creative and different ways in being able to come up with a story. Like, for instance, there's a friend of mine who, he's not able to come up with stories by just staring up at the sky or centering himself while there's no one else to think about or nothing else to think about or nothing else that's on your mind. How he comes up with it is, and again, this is just one example that I can think of, is that he looks at the geography of where he is at that moment, and then he'll create and build and come up with a story based on, you know, it could be in an apartment, or it could be in a mansion, or it could even be in a hotel room. He will come up with a story somehow that will revolve around that environment in particular.
Well, that's very interesting, but it sounds as if he has set up some form of an outline for himself, and that outline varies depending on his location.
Yeah, pretty much. That was his one way of doing it. I've heard other experiences. I've heard instances where it just happened to be a little subtle nuance, like someone will actually step on a leaf, and then all of a sudden they'll come up with something completely profound. And it amazes me, and it boggles my mind to a certain extent that we're able to come up with these stories out of, you know, the least likely places that we, you know, that we come upon, that we stumble upon, in a sense.
I think you're right. I think we have to trust. That's the part of the trust, that you get an idea, or something sparks your attention, and then if mm-hmm. you kind of go with it and see where that takes you, then mm-hmm. you might be surprised. But I guess my question is, did the final story of Relinquish, was it what you had originally anticipated in the very beginning, or did it really change throughout the filming process?
No, absolutely. Here's the thing. When I first came up with the story, there was much more depth and detail in terms of different storylines going on and different plots that were taking place. You know, originally, well, the final product, I'll give you this, the final product is her reuniting with her father. And the way she reunites with her father is through this green blanket that she's always dearly treasured ever since she was a little girl. It's not something she clings on to or holds on to for comfort nowadays, since she's a teenager, and she's independent in that sense of the matter. It's just something that she can identify with and she can cope with ever since she was a little girl. You know, whenever dire straits would occur or she'd hit rock bottom, she always cling to that blanket. So through that blanket, she feels that she can redeem her father by giving him that blanket. So in a sense, that was not the original idea. The original idea was something way completely different. I don't know how many revisions I went through creating the story, going through the subtext of it, which was probably some of the biggest challenges and hurdles I've ever had to face, as not just as a director, but as a writer, because as a writer, a lot of problems that writers have is that they go off different tangents, and then they think that the whole world is at their hands, when really it has to be the complete, it has to contradict itself in a way. You have to contradict yourself as a writer, and in a sense, you have to limit yourself. So from the very beginning, it was much more different than it was now. Now it's much more light. It's much more uplifting at the very end. Way back before when I was first writing it and when I was first having it come to fruition, it was much more dark. It was much more seedy and sinister. And in a sense, it was to that extreme that it became more uplifting, because it wasn't very appealing to me after a while of just tucking it away and, you know, getting back to it every now and then. So that's how I actually got to the final product, and that's how much different it was from when I first started writing the project as to what it is now.
So did your message change? I'm sure there are many messages with the umbrella of forgiveness, a relationship between a father and his daughter. But was there one message that was consistent throughout the entire film?
Yeah.
Meaning when you first started as to the finished product.
Well, yeah, well, from the very beginning, from the very get-go to the end of the project, the essence was still there. The theme and the underlying tones of the film and the story itself had always been there from the very beginning, and I want to make absolutely sure that they showed up on screen and not just on paper when I would come to the conclusion of completing this project and actually finalizing it. So it always been there, and I wanted to make sure that it would stay there and that it would echo among audiences that would go to see it.
Now, do you have a particular filmatic style, and who, what other filmmakers have you idolized and have used their essence in your film?
Whenever I hear that question, it's like saying that, you know, what's your favorite type of a filmmaker or your influences? There's a lot of filmmakers that I could come up with that would take up this whole interview that have influenced me. But the main and big influences have been filmmakers like Martin Scorsese, Quentin Tarantino, and Steven Spielberg, of course. As many other filmmakers would say, I'm not the only one who would say that. And Brian De Palma, Oliver Stone, and even classic film directors like Alfred Hitchcock and Elia Kazan, John Huston, and even Charlie Chaplin to even go back further, and even D.W. Griffith, just to see where the original roots of filmmaking had come from and how they've evolved over the past 100 years or however long filmmaking and storytelling, visual storytelling in that sense of the matter, has been around.
Well, it sounds as if you use a lot of cinematic styles and that you are not really focusing on a particular genre. Like, I don't know, if you look at Quentin Tarantino films, there's a certain dark side,
yeah,
or black comedy, and you know that's the essence of his films. But it sounds like you are not so, maybe, and I don't, correct me if I'm wrong, your message is important, so whatever style you use will,
yeah,
benefit your message.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, in that sense of the matter, in that respect, what it comes down to pretty much is being able to find your own niche, not just as a filmmaker or even as a creative storyteller, but as an artist in the long run. And the most important thing that I believe is that as an artist, you have to be able to grow over a period of time and you know, explore new territory. So it's not just a matter of having a filmmaic style to whatever movies you have. It's also important, this is me personally, I believe that it's important to actually be able to, you know, be able to grow, you know, stylistically and also visually as a storyteller, and also jumping into new terrain. It could be a genre, it could be a story, or it could be in something that actually happened and your interpretation of what it just happened, like The Social Network, when Mark Zuckerberg rose to fame after becoming the new CEO of Facebook, and how that came to be. And that's one's interpretation of it, but it's just a matter of being able to tell that story is what helps you overall in the long run. I'm hoping I'm answering your question on this one.
Yes, you are. You are. Now, do you think, here's a great, interesting question, I think. How has social networking, do you think, influenced filmmaking and how you tell your story?
Social networking, in the sense, since we live in a new age now where we can be able to, you know, network with anyone who we've never met in person just by the click of a button, it's tremendous. It's huge. It's actually growing each and every minute, even as we speak right now. It's getting even larger and larger and more global. And the fact of the matter is that the more global it gets, the higher the competition gets, for that sense of the matter, as to what original story can be,
comes along and what we haven't really seen before. Because a lot of things that we see nowadays are just stuff that's been recycled over and over and over again, and stuff that's been originally rooted from the classic stories, whether it be Greek mythology or verses out of the Bible. It doesn't matter. But what matters is what people go to movies for the original stories. So in that sense, yes, social networking and seeing what type of different movies that are out there is always going to continually grow.
But I think you said something very interesting that in my opinion, you know, the United States is known for movies that are driven through special effects. And
yeah.
And the European films are more character driven. And over the past, maybe 5 years or more, a lot of celebrities, Gwyneth Paltrow, you know, are going to these smaller films, and now these smaller films are becoming more mainstream. And I think, as an avid movie goer, that there's nothing better than a wonderfully written story.
Yeah. Well, as long as there's a story, as long as the essence of the story drives the film, and as long as you have, and the other plus is, as long as you have great characters in order to help carry that story, then you're going to be engaged and you're going to be carried along the whole way. And I have to, I wish I had stopped you earlier in terms of European films having a more character-driven appeal to it, as opposed to what we have over here is just special effects and, you know, one after another. It's not necessarily true, because there are plenty of movies that are made here in America that are mainstream that are character-driven. So it's not just classifying it to, oh, Europe has a more, character-driven style, and America is more driven on based on special effects. It just all comes down to the story. It doesn't matter.
I mean, you're true. That's very true. But mm-hmm. I often think that America, that their tendency is not to focus too much on character driven, in a sense. I guess the smaller films came from Europe, and now because they're becoming more popular, America has put out more to be more competitive
mm-hmm.
with that type of story. I don't know. It's all very fascinating to me. How, you know, here you are, a director and a writer, so you got to wear both hats and
mm-hmm.
had a story idea and the style in which you used and other characteristics that made your story what it is, and
mm-hmm.
That's great. You know, I you have a different perspective as somebody who has another story to tell, and it's wonderful. So now with this film under your belt, what project are you working on next?
Well, there's a whole slew of projects that I have in mind. It's just a matter of finding which one that appeals to me the most. Because lately, what I've been doing is I've just been writing a lot, so I can have a whole slew of material to work on in the near future. But as time goes on, and as I begin to mature, even, and I get older and older, I just have to find out and nitpick as to which story is most appealing and which one I can build upon. So in a sense, I've got a whole slew of material and a whole slew of outlines that I've yet to improve for my own benefit, and what appeals to me most is the story. So I can't really say as to what I'm going to be working on next. But what I can tell you is that I have been freelancing more often than not, just so that way I could be more well-versed as a director and as a producer, because I feel that the most important most important aspects of filmmaking are not just directing and writing, but also the other key departments, such as the art department, the camera department, sound department. Each and every department is important. So what I've been doing lately
you know, along with writing is also going out and going on small gigs, whether they pay or not. It's just a matter of being able to, you know, learn as much as I can and be able to better communicate with those departments as a director.
Well, you know, I think that's very, very wise. As you know, a lot of the talent agencies here in Los Angeles, if you want to get into that aspect of the entertainment industry, you start in the mailroom. So
yeah.
You need to know what happens at the bottom. I don't even necessarily want to say the bottom, but at one aspect of the company to another aspect, so you have a better understanding of how it all works. That's brilliant. And you never know where you might find inspiration, or you'll find another aspect of filmmaking that you prefer over another one.
Yeah. Well, I actually want to touch upon that, is that I've been finding lately more often than not that from working from the bottom up, and or at least working from the bottom of the barrel, not even in the mailroom, but even on a shoot that pays literally nothing and you're just there to learn. What happens after a while of doing that is that you become more inspired and more motivated to work even harder and believe in yourself that you are actually worth something and that you can actually move forward. And I just, as a matter of fact, I just had that epitome about a week ago, working on a couple of gigs, one after another, that didn't pay. And then I finally got another gig that does pay. Yeah, it wasn't the type of project that I'd really want to be associated with, but at the same time, it pays. So it's a way of saying, you know, whatever comes my way, and however many gigs I get, whether or not they don't pay, it's just a matter of how one feels on the inside and whether they're ready or not to move forward. It's knowing when you're ready to move forward and being able to work your way up and actually network with people who you want to shake hands with and who you actually want to work with and make a career out of working with as well.
Well, I think you want to put yourself in opportunities where, just like you said, you can meet people who appreciate you for the talents that you have and can give you an opportunity to meet people who can help move your career forward. And it's all up to us, meaning
yeah.
You know, you and I, you get this opportunity, and then if you're wise enough, you can learn so much by, like you say, being at the bottom of the barrel, because you're stepping outside of your art form and looking how things operate. So you can learn more, ask questions, and I think it's the best learning experience. And sometimes, you know, money is a funny thing. I think we want to be valued for what we do and our time that we give, and
mm-hmm.
money is used as that form of exchange. But just like you mentioned, the gig that you got that wasn't paying, you seem to have learned a greater deal from the one that offered you money.
Yeah, let's just say that working on a gig in exchange for money is less appealing than working on a gig for free and being thanked at the end of the day. I'd rather be recognized for my hard work and not paying for it, because it shows how dedicated one person can be, or at least anyone can be, if they're willing to work for free and then want to be paid.
Right. But for everybody listening, you are open to being paid for your craft.
Yeah. Yes. Yes,
you are valuable, and you are very good at what you do. You were so gracious in allowing me to see Relinquish, and I must tell you, and I think we spoke earlier about this, that it's so professional. It's just so beautiful. And there was a film that I was watching, a commercial film, and your film was more professional looking, as opposed to the cinematography, the sound, the editing, than this commercial film that I saw. So you are
right.
Truly a very gifted young filmmaker and have a very successful road ahead of you, I think. And it's just, you know, it's at your door. It's there for the mm-hmm. taking.
Yeah. Yeah, well, go on.
And you never know where it's going to lead.
No, to touch upon that even more, now you're actually getting me more excited because now I'm trying to get words out of my mouth and I can't even, you know, in that sense of the matter, what happens is that one, you know, you don't know what's going to happen at the end of whatever road you reach when it comes to working on a gig. I could be working as a PA and not even know that I'm going to be granted this next gig that's not only going to elevate me financially, but that's going to elevate my career even more, and that's going to allow me to network with more people and get to know more people and shake hands with people that I'm wanting to shake hands with. And in a sense, it's really gratifying and really rewarding in the long run. But the big catch is patience. That's all it takes is a matter of time and patience. And from my personal experience, what ends up happening if you're too impatient, you don't end up getting what you want in the long run. And it's all a matter of what it is that you want in the long run. So in a way, if let's say I keep working one gig after another that pays that pays me very well, like one after another, it could be in the art department or, you know, it could be working the camera or anything like that. But what ends up happening is that nothing really, you know, I'm not really elevating anywhere or I may not even be declining. So it's just completely static along the board. It's just
a flat line all across. Yeah, and I think what you're saying too, Garrett, is that you have to be passionate about what you do, and I think it sounds as if you found your passion, and so learning about all the aspects of filmmaking is passion, and wherever that leads you is great. If it doesn't, and sometimes having an expectation of how that journey should be can disappoint us because we might not be mm-hmm. getting what we think we're getting. But I can't believe that this show is just about out of time, and I want to make sure people can contact you for you and your wonderful talents. And so people can log on to LinkedIn, www.linkedin.com. They can go to facebook.com, and also to see a series of your work, they can go to Behance.com, Behance, and it's Garrett, Garrett Goldenberg, Goldenberg. And I want to make sure that people check you out and your latest short film, Relinquish. And I'm looking forward to having you back on the show next time for your next feature.
Yeah. Likewise, and me too. And it's I can't believe we're actually out of time either. So I just want to take the time to thank you, Lauren, for having me be on your show and actually interview me and take the time out to actually ask me about my film and how I've been doing in terms of my film career. It's been a great pleasure, and I look forward to doing this again.
Oh, you're more than welcome. I'm just very grateful to have the opportunity to be one of the first to get to know a future filmmaker, Hollywood, a successful future maker of Hollywood. So I wish you well, and do keep us posted here on your new gigs. And again, I want to thank Garrett Goldenberg for being on the show today. You can reach him on Facebook.com, LinkedIn.com, and Behance.com. And you can always call us here and find out how to reach Garrett if you can't do so. So thank you so much for tuning in. And please join me next time for another wild and crazy journey in someone else's shoes. This is Lauren Leibowitz. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time. We'll leave you with Keith Chagall's Bolero.